bleeding ear.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up and take it away. Take it away.
What? He just got spammed on the freaking bulletin board and he's leaving the post right now.
What?
That's why I gave you moderator privilege.
Didn't they say something
son of a
about
bitch.
Link's testicles? What?
Yes, testes, testes, 1, 2, 3.
Holy crap, I can't hear.
Man, we got a lot of email last week about me making a comment. We should probably cut down the intro a little bit.
I was like, no!
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was screaming about that one.
They were not happy
say
about
it ain't
that.
Show.
Although we should get it changed from 1 hour to 2 hours.
What changed?
The intro. Because we're...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we are actually 2 hours instead of the one when we actually got that the first time.
Well, it's a surprise for all the new listeners.
It is, yes.
Wait a minute.
When is this fucking thing going to stop?
It doesn't end.
They just keep freaking talking, man.
Shut up.
I don't get it.
Shut up. You know what? It was positively quiet today on the email, tech show email. I thought for sure you guys...
I'm getting a lot of spam through that one.
I know, it's starting to get picked up.
Yeah.
Dude, we're getting really spam everywhere. We're getting spam on the forums. We're getting spam on the goddamn Frapper map. What
yeah,
the fuck, man?
The Frapper one is a new one. I've seen a lot of people posting about that on Frapper.
You know what? I haven't turned on that feature of approval. What is that called? A lot of people voted yay for that, that I have to give
we
approval.
Should.
Moderation?
Yeah, no, approval. To a new mem, two people signing up.
Yeah, well, that might be a good idea.
I don't want to be a dick. You know what I mean? I want people freely come in, use it, but you can't trust that anymore.
You can't.
Not anymore, no.
People are, because it's not, you know, people
yeah, but
use
you know,
it legitimately.
If you get a couple of us, you know, if a few of us have access to approve people, then we can
right, but
get
it's,
them in and
it's,
get it
it's
done
just
real
a shame.
Fast.
Did you get my email?
Yeah, I still haven't set it up yet, but.
All right.
I shouldn't say that. I did actually change some things, but I haven't posted yet.
Because I did install all the spam stuff on there.
Yes, I saw that.
And I didn't make any other configurations. Like, you have to be registered to post. So.
But okay.
What ends up happening is if you don't turn it on, once you start posting to that, because, man, I was, what, about the third day in the logger, I was getting spam. Postings
okay.
on there that
this
I had
is,
to approve.
This is the program that you...
WordPress.
Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, the program you told me to register for.
Yeah, there's two. Well, there's that, but I also have the other two. I have the CAPTCHA.
Yeah, you got those two turned on.
Right. Yeah, there's one that the feature... Okay. There's a certain feature on it that you have to get the API key.
Okay.
Turn it on. And it's really easy.
Does someone actually read a freaking spam post on a Frapper map and say, hey, that looks like a product I really want to buy?
Well, you know what it does? Like, if you look at a lot of the postings on the forum, like, these people won't post, but they'll have, like, a...
Gibberish. It's like gibberish, like...
Well, they don't necessarily post, but they'll sign up, and they'll have a, like, a smiley on there or something.
Do you know
and
what?
It's a link to a website, and when the Google bots go out and, they see all these links to these websites, it increases the hit ratio. And they get bumped up higher in, like, Google ads and stuff.
You know, I have one comment to make about the Frapper map spam, though. And that comment is this. If you're going to spam us on the Frapper map, the least you could do is put little icons on there with, like, boobies or something. Right?
Yeah, at least give us porn, you know?
If you're going to spam us on there with some kind of, you know...
Nope, we don't need any
some kind
penis
of pharmaceutical company, the least you could do is put boobies on the picture.
Yeah.
That's because then we may actually look at it, too.
Do they even have pictures posted with the spam stuff?
Or I don't know. I haven't even bothered.
No, they don't put any pictures. You know how you can
not.
You know how you can tell?
Put boobies
it's
on,
a spam entry. There's no location.
There's no
it's just a name.
This bastard. And speaking of spam, and the king of spam himself from Denmark, Trolls, is on the line.
Spamming us with Sousa.
The Sousa spammer.
Yeah, right.
And he absolutely had to come on tonight because he's got something really important he needs to say. So let me get my mute button there and he can start talking.
Well, first of all, what freaking time is it over there?
Yeah, what time is it over there?
It's like 3 in the morning. Huh?
It's 02:38 a.m.
Holy shit, it must be really important then.
Yeah, it
we're actually sorry to keep you up this late.
And you know what?
No, I'm up anyway.
You'll be surprised. It's not about Sousa.
Yeah, it's not.
Go ahead, hit us with it.
Okay, just before I do that, I was doing want to comment on that poll you posted on the forum there, Dan. Why don't you just enable email verification on the forum?
Yeah, why don't you? Then at least we could spam
the fuckers
back. Why
don't you talk about your topic and not worry about the email? No, you can
then at least
we
could spam the fuckers back if we had an email address.
You know what? In order to sign up for the forum, you have to put an email in, and it emails the person back, and they have to verify the email.
Does it? Maybe they're using like
so they do get around
thingy.
That.
They
have
spam bots.
They have something. They you know they're smart.
Maybe that part they actually use real people.
Just have like an auto reply.
I would think that I think that somebody is actually signing up, or they're doing that because if not, I would expect to see a hell of a lot more spam come through there. If it was just a bot doing that,
boobies.
Boobies.
But I'm gonna look at that right now. But go ahead and talk away.
Okay. Okay, it's the reason I wanted to come on the show so urgently is because the United States Congress is preparing proposing a new law that they call the Intellectual Property Protection Act of 2006, and you could basically call this a DMCA 2. And if you thought the DMCA was bad, this is even worse. But this is a new draft. This is a draft legislation backed by Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and Representative Lamar Smith. And what it basically will do, as one of the things it will do, is will make copyright infringement a federal crime, and enhance punishments for that, give people like the RIAA and related bastards access to server logs from the RSC, the ISPs, without a court order, and related things just to crack down on quote-unquote piracy.
I tiny URL'd the article so everyone can take a look at it on CNET.
Yeah. But also, one of the things I noticed about it is that a whole bunch of software companies are backing this law, and what pisses me really off is that this includes both Symantec, Sun Microsystems, Oracle, Intuit, and, get ready here, Red Hat.
Are you kidding me, man?
No Red Hat's in there. I don't know if Red Hat hasn't officially said that they're backing this law, but they're in a group that that backs it.
We gotta get those people on here, man, and bust their balls about it.
Yeah, I was just stunned when I saw Red Hat in that text, man.
Somehow, out of all the Linux companies, that one doesn't surprise me.
You think?
You know,
that one doesn't, because like Red Hat is the Microsoft of Linux.
But
you know what I mean?
They've done a lot of good, man.
And that's why we never have anybody from Red Hat on this show.
They never respond to any of our inquiries.
Like,
you know that?
They don't, because they're, you know what, Red Hat, you know, listen to me. I think you're a bunch of rat bastards. And if you don't think
they didn't give you a hat.
If you would like to argue with me about that, we'd love to have one of your representative peons on the show so that we could argue about that. But that's wrong, man. You know? That's just wrong.
The other news is the net neutrality bill got shot down, man. And that sucks too. That means it's going to be multi-tiered internets.
Well, yeah, but that was bought. That bill was bought and paid by AT&T. They have some of the hugest lobbyists in the country, and they paid for that bill to go through.
I tiny URL'd the second article too about the net neutrality being shot down actually.
Right,
friggin' lobbyists, man. What's up with these politicians, man? Can they all be
bought?
I heard
that some of the reason that it hasn't been passed is a lot of them would rather have a stronger, stronger wording in there to promote net neutrality. They thought it was too soft. But hey, I'm all for DMCA too.
It's pretty draconian, man. Have you read what it involves? It's like they can come in and confiscate all your equipment. They could freaking haul your ass to jail. It's pretty bad, man.
No, because
yeah,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If I was DVD John, I'd get the freaking hell out of the United States. Not to any to offense of any of you guys or any of the listeners, but he could end up 20 years in jail. What?
No offense taken, don't worry.
No offense taken. And okay. You know what? We're practically Canadians here anyway. We have so many Canadians on the show.
You know what it is, man? You get assholes everywhere. Unfortunately, there's a bunch of them in Washington, D.C.
Yep. Lawyers and politicians. Here we go again.
It's the same thing, man. Lawyers and politicians got to be bought. That's what it really boils down to. It doesn't matter what party they belong to. They all do it.
But you could fix the problem of lawyers and politicians that cost you, what, 10 cents a person, right? That's it.
They're all guilty of it, man. Doesn't make a difference what party. They're all guilty of it.
Bang, bang, bang.
True.
Lawyers, guns, and money.
Yeah, right.
That's sane.
We're getting back to our 80s roots here or something.
You know what's really scary about this new law? It would make it, for example, if Sony decided to keep their stance on that rootkit, it would basically make it a federal crime to remove that rootkit and remove security threats on your computer. Mm. That's scary.
Wait a minute. Pat, that's not the article I'm looking for.
What are you talking about? There's two of them I posted.
Oh, I gotta go back even further.
Ding, ding.
There's our other guest.
No,
tonight.
I think we have to really, you know, in America, we really have to start considering placing our votes for some politicians that don't suck, you know.
Did you guys hear that episode?
I know that's a difficult thing to do because most of them just plain old suck.
Did you guys listen to that episode of
perhaps getting some politicians in office that are less than 900 years old might help?
They were talking about the iPad.
Yeah.
Did you guys listen to that at all?
The guy that sent his back.
I have not listened to an episode of Twit since the Apple 30th anniversary brouhaha.
There's this group called IPAC, and what it is, it's a political action committee, you know, with an emphasis on internet and technology issues. And what they do is they have a list of politicians who, you know, completely are off base.
Wow, big list.
Yeah, it's real big list, yeah.
You know, speaking of Twit, have you guys listened to Foss?
Yeah.
Every episode of Foss I've pulled down will not run for me.
Really?
I listen to it. I don't like it.
The last one was pretty bad. I like Chris DeBonaman, but that sucked, that last one. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah, it was with Commander Taco. Ronaldo.
Well, at least he was honest about it. You know, Slashdot is built on 1997 technology.
Yeah.
It's still running.
Yeah, it's still running.
Our guest just dropped off.
I guess so. He didn't like what we were saying, what I was saying.
No. Maybe he had a bad connection.
It's possible.
I hope he comes back.
You think?
What time is it?
It's quarter of.
Yep.
What else? So politicians suck. I think we've come to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I should have read this article before we started.
Speaking of politicians suck, I just want to interject one little trivial fact in here. Today is the 20th anniversary of what? Anybody know?
Hi. Oh, sorry, this is Martin Stryker. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Hey, Martin, how are you?
How you doing, Martin?
How you doing, Martin? Trivia for you, Martin. Today's the 20th anniversary of what?
I'm not sure. What is
anyone,
the 20th anniversary
anyone?
Of today?
20 years. What happened 20 years ago?
What happened 20 years ago?
1986.
The release of Windows 95.
Okay.
Yeah, no. The first release of Windows.
What's going to happen? What's going to happen 20 years from now? The first release of Vista.
Yeah. Oh, wait, that would be 10 years ago, yeah. 20 years ago. Wasn't it the first?
Chernobyl.
Oh, yeah, Chernobyl.
Really, that long
Chernobyl,
ago?
Chernobyl, yeah. It just really freaked me out. I didn't know it was that long ago myself.
What's that have to do with Linux?
Well, we were talking about politics there, and, you know, that kind of goes along with the little bad hand-holding politic kind of thing in the former Soviet Union.
Ouch.
That is still causing all kinds of problems today, by the way. So I figured I'd mention that. 20 years ago, Chernobyl. Because I can remember what I was doing when I heard that on the news. No. Yeah.
Martin, we were just talking about
your history, folks, for today.
The different bills going around, the DMCA-2, basically, and the net neutrality vote. Have you read any of the articles regarding them?
Pat, I don't think he knows you're talking to him. Pat was just reiterating that we were talking about some of the bills that have been going around with the net neutrality and the new digital copyright bill, and making commentary on that.
Well, I guess this is why, you know, those podcasting people get to edit their shit out.
That's it.
They edit out those long pauses.
Even guys that do live shows, they stop doing them live. Like Ben Rev lately, they've been doing pre-recorded shows. Have you noticed that, Dan?
That's no fun, though. That's why we have like four hosts, though, right? Four hosts and a couple of guests to fill up that odd silent time.
You know what's really
Hopefully
cool?
Someone will
is
have
when you guys say. Aren't here, Alan actually talks.
He does, yeah. Well,
that's the album you want.
Little Rascals.
The Buhunks.
And then that makes great radio, too, when you both look at each other's screen.
Yeah, yes, and don't tell anybody what it is.
You'll love it. I'll get you a coffee. You'll love it.
Definitely. Well, you know what? Our guest is here tonight, and there's no reason why we should not introduce him.
Yeah.
Pat.
Is he still on?
Yes, he's still on.
Okay. Well, we've got Martin Stryker, who's the editor-in-chief of Linux Magazine.
Yay!
Martin.
Are you there, Martin?
I am. I'm having some time. One of you is at least a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I can hear you.
Yeah, that's called Pat, and he's always like that. And no matter what we do,
we have yet to figure out why you can't talk to him.
It's odd, though, because it's sporadic. Sometimes it sounds fine, and sometimes it doesn't sound very good at all.
Now, for our international listeners, and we know we have at least three or four, which Linux magazine are you the editor of?
There are several named Linux magazine. I am the editor of the one that's based in the States. The logo is the biggest difference. It has a small logo in the top left corner. It's not the one that Linux in white on a black field. That one is from, I guess, the UK and Germany. And the URL is the linux-mag.com.
Okay.
I hope that helps.
Oh, no, it does. And I know in the United States, the UK one is called Linux...
Linux Pro.
Linux Pro. But in other countries, it's called Linux Magazine. Now, is there a difference in the name that your Linux magazine has in other countries?
Does our magazine have a different name in other countries? No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
No, and to maybe to further differentiate, if you open the table of contents, Randall Schwartz writes our Perl column. Jeremy Garcia from Linux Questions does our tech support column. Jason Perler does our desktop column. Jerry Peek does our Power Tools column. So, you know, if you have any questions, you can always open the table of contents and make sure that those names appear, I guess.
Right, and if you're looking for it in the United States, it's the ones that don't cost $12, $15.
Yeah.
They, They cost, what is it? I think it's now $4.99 an issue. So it's...
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in there.
Yes.
Yeah, it is confusing. If you go into Barnes & Noble, they will have... I mean, it's nice that they carry all of them. I think they carry the three from Europe and ours and Open External. So it is nice that people can find a little bit of everything.
Now, Linux Magazine has been published for what year? How many years now? At least 10, right?
It started in May or June of 99.
Oh.
So we've been, this is our seventh year.
Great. And how difficult has it been to maintain a Linux Magazine for almost 7 years? Because we've seen a lot of them, or a handful of them, come and go.
Maxim Linux.
Right. It has, it's varied, you know, quite a bit. The early 99, 2000, 2001, where there were a lot of, there was a lot of money being invested in different Linux startups. And so there's quite a bit of I'm sure, of that capital invested in advertising and getting the word out that these places existed. And much like the magazines, a lot of those places have disappeared over time or have been acquired or their focus has changed. And over time, the constituents of advertisers has changed quite a bit. It's changed quite a bit. And even now you're seeing... mainline companies, IBM and HP, among others, they're not really pushing Linux for Linux itself. They've begun to, you know, Linux is a well-established thing. It's a technology that's accepted, so they've moved on to looking at applications of Linux, things above the kernel and the shell and looking at running real applications on it. So it continues to be a challenge, and the advertisers continue to change. Still a lot of specialized hardware, distributions, high-performance computing hardware, and I guess this month we actually have Dell coming back as an advertiser, which is interesting. But they've begun to push their Linux focus a little bit more, too. So did I answer your question? It's been challenging the last year and a half, certainly.
No, you have. You have answered my question. And your magazine is one of the few, if I'm not mistaken, that you can access all the articles from the back issues online. Is that correct?
Yes, but we have a... That is correct. We have about a 60 or 90 day lag between the time that the print magazine goes to the newsstand and the time that an article will appear online. But if you go to the website, every article we've ever published since 1999, plus some other things that have been web only, you can go and everything is indexed by Google now and Yahoo at least. And there's a vast repository of information that you can access for free.
Now, here's a good question for you. Why Linux Magazine? Why your magazine? If I had to find, if I had to use one, why would it be yours?
Mm-hmm. I think that the biggest difference between our magazine and some of the others, the editorial, well, first I would say that our magazine is aimed at Linux professionals. So every issue of the magazine is designed and crafted. And when I say crafted, I mean that we commission all of the articles that appear in the magazine. So we plan out our editorial calendar. We try to poll people and look forward 6 to 12 months and figure out maybe, you know, what's going to be important in 6 to 12 months and start to cover that. And so I think we tend to be very focused on what people are doing, what challenges people are having, and providing them with information to get their job done. I think that's really the biggest difference between our magazine and something else. So my hope is that every issue, that if someone picks up every issue, there's something that they find that they can apply to their work right away. So I think that's the biggest difference.
You had, if I'm not mistaken, didn't you have a sister magazine called was it Cluster World, or was that
Cluster World, that's right, you're right.
Yeah, and did that get rolled back into Linux Linux Magazine then?
It did. I mean, Linux Magazine always has a high-performance computing column, and then once a year we do a special issue focused on high-performance computing where the features of the magazine look at grid or a variety of technologies for HPC, whether it's software frameworks for doing parallel programming or high-performance interconnects. Clusterworld, Doug Edlin was the editor-in-chief of Clusterworld, and he continues to write the Cluster Rant column in Linux Magazine, and we have another software. It's usually a software-focused column on programming for HPC as well. So, and we try to do, sometimes we don't always do one, but sometimes, most of the time we try to have a feature in each issue on high performance computing. So yeah, Doug and the spirit of Clusterworld is folded back into Linux Magazine.
Actually, we luck out because Douglas Edlin lives in our area.
Yep.
And he came to our lug meeting right when the magazine first was coming out, and he's a great guy.
Brought us some comp copies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hooked us up. Yeah. We really like that, by the way. So if you like to, get us some comp stuff from Linux Magazine.
But that must have been tough to actually have a magazine that was kind of almost specialized like that, devoted towards Linux clustering or clustering in general. And that must have been hard to find a marketable audience for. That would sustain
multiple issues. That was a big thing at the time, though, right?
Oh no, we were just talking about how Clusterworld. It must have been difficult to find for that, because it's such a specialized magazine, to sustain itself over a long period of time.
There is an audience for the information. It may not be especially big, but they need information. They want to share information. The body of advertisers is fairly small, so I think people really liked the magazine. But I think that you're right. There was a challenge in trying to make it work financially. It has its merits. I just don't think it's difficult to support financially, as you surmised.
So, the magazine that you guys put out, do you actually use Linux in the process of putting the magazine together?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how much little code here and there actually is used to assemble the magazine. The process of assembling the magazine is someone will send me their story. We have our own very simple markup language. That markup language, after I edit the articles, get passed through a series of Perl filters. The first Perl filter takes the markup language and creates an XML, sort of a neutral XML format. And then from that neutral format, we go to generate Quark files, and we generate the HTML that eventually gets posted to the website. The website runs a customized version of Mambo. And when I go to post an entire issue of the magazine, I just push a button running shell scripts in Perl, and it posts an entire issue. So, yeah, there's there's quite a bit of open source that goes into producing it and running the site. PHP, Perl, MySQL, our servers run Debian, and so that's, you know, very easy to keep up to date. Just kind of like apt-get update and apt-get upgrade, and you know, we get kernels and updates and things like that, and Apache, the usual characters. So yeah, there's quite a bit. I think the only thing that comes in is really the Mac to run Quark to produce the high resolution PDF to go to the printer, and then both the art director and I run Quark to proof all the pages.
Now, do you see any Linux solutions coming down the pike to kind of supplant Quark there, or do you think Quark's still going to always remain up there at the top? Be hard to knock off, kind of like Adobe Photoshop is on the photo side.
Yeah, I know that, you know, some of us would have a preference to switch to InDesign because it's a little bit, well, it's a lot more powerful, I think, from what we've seen and for what we want to do with it. I don't know anything. You know, I've seen, I can't recall names. I've seen the one, there is one desktop publisher, and I can't recall the name.
Scribus?
Yeah, maybe it is Scribus that I've seen recently. You know, one of the challenges is that with the Quark files, we have our art director, we have our advertising production person, we have the pre-press and the press, and all those people in the chain pretty much need Quark or InDesign in order to get their job done. So it's kind of like a chicken and egg problem. I mean, if the pre-press and the production house would take files in another format, that might be okay. If Thrive has produced the kind of PDFs the production house needed, then that would be okay too. So I think it's one of those things, kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like Word, maybe, or something where you just need to have it because everybody uses it. So
you're kind of like stuck in that position where you need to interact with all these other people that, you know, you're in that position,
yeah,
where you,
yeah,
have to cater to them, so to speak, because if not, that magazine isn't coming out.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, most of what we do is fairly automated. The Quark files are text markup and, you know, can easily produce a Scribus file or an InDesign file. But it's upstream that need compatibility as well.
And we see that a lot in the industry when it comes to looking at alternative solutions. There seems to be always one kind of common practice that rises to the top, you know, like in the office, where in the business world it's Microsoft Office, in the publishing world it's Quark, in the photography world it's Adobe Photoshop, you know, and it's almost impossible to break out of that.
Yeah, that's probably true in, almost every industry, that there's something that everybody depends on and it's difficult to break away from it. But it is nice to, you know, PDF is a cool thing that most everything produces nowadays or understands, and that does make things just a lot easier. When I download the magazine to proof it, before we say push the button and let the presses run, they're just low-res PDFs or high-res PDFs with registration marks and the whole thing, and that's pretty cool. There's not. I log into a website, I download the PDFs. They used to ship us these giant blue lines overnight, and things have changed quite a bit, just, you know, from PDFs. So I think PDFs make things to where you could, you know, Scribe has had the features and could produce the things that the print houses needed. I think it would be okay.
Now, are you looking to do that? Are you looking for a completely Linux or open source alternative, or are you just riding the boat into the press with everybody else, so to speak.
Yeah, I think for now we have to we use the best tools for producing the print magazine that we can.
Because I think Scribus is making some huge strides in that area with PostScript and PDF compliance or conformity with other of the with the Quark and Adobe applications. So, you know, hopefully one day it's going to be a serious contender.
Yeah, like I said, for what we use Quark for as compared to, you know, a fashion magazine or a newspaper, we could probably adopt something fairly easily, as long as everybody else could take the data they produced.
Yeah, and I noticed you didn't say that you use Microsoft Publisher.
No, I have to say we're the production part of the house is very Mac centric, and again, that's kind of like, you know, the advertising houses produce everything in EPS or AI files, and that's the way that it goes. So,
yeah, I was just kidding on the publisher thing. That's about the only document I dread coming down the pike when I have to convert it into something that's usable. That's a hard one.
I cannot stand editing in Word. I just don't get it. I would rather. So,
now when you look at those PDF proofs that come in, are you doing that on a Linux machine?
I have on my desk. I have a Google G5, and then I have a Linux laptop, and then I have the two servers. So for me, I usually just drop into Preview or into the Acrobat Professional and look at the PDF.
So I was wondering if you had a preferred PDF reader that you use under Linux.
You know, that's something that I don't do very often on the Linux machine. Do you guys typically use like a Ghost script or just a reader on Linux? You guys okay with that?
Yeah, I mean, I've used XPDF, the Adobe Acrobat, there's GNOME's PDF reader, KDE's PDF reader, but the one I've been really enamored with is Events.
Events.
Mm-hmm. This is nice.
And that's been really great.
The new Adobe one is nice, too, Adobe Acrobat Reader. Is it version 7 or something like that?
Yeah, the Adobe Acrobat Reader version 7.
That works really good.
But, you know, I prefer Events, but that's just me.
Yeah.
I will look at it. Is it spelled like it sounds? Evince?
Yes, Evince. And if you're running Debian, it should be a simple app getaway. So I believe I have it on Ubuntu here, and I have it on my Arch machine. So, yeah, it should be no problem to get that. We could just compile it from source, right? Because you have nothing better to do with your day.
I use the X server on Mac quite a bit. That way I can run Eclipse from the Linux laptop, or if it's something that will only, say, compile on Debian very easily, then I can just move it to Debian and connect over the internet back to my Mac or back to the Linux machine. So usually I choose the path of least resistance when it comes to building stuff from source. And Debian is so easy, either to build from source or just to type, you know, apt-get and get the package itself. So,
now, what did you just bring up there? Because somebody bothered me on the IRC, and now,
are you on the IRC?
No, but Oh, you were just talking about Debian. Oh.
Dan's brain goes blank.
Oh, yeah, the X server on OS X. How do you like that, that implementation of the X server running on top of Aqua like that? Or maybe you could say side by side.
I it's worked fairly well. There are a few. Most of the trouble I seem to have are related to the difference between, for example, I'll start at, it'll give me an X on Mac OS X, and then I'll want to go ahead and SSH over somewhere. And some applications, I don't know if it depends on the version of X or how they were built, but sometimes minus X won't work, but minus Y will work in different instances there. But otherwise, as intensive as Eclipse is, it seems to run fine. And I couldn't tell you exactly what trying it again, but there are oftentimes where, you know, cutting and pasting between X and a Mac window works really well. And I can't remember what the situations are. And that's nice too, being able to kind of go back and forth in that way. My preference is to use the terminal window, because then it is full cut and paste between everything. But it seems to work fine. I've not ever had much trouble with it. I guess it even for running something like Eclipse, which is very, just has windows all over the place.
Yeah, I have good experience with it, but I've had some issues with the copy and paste, that sometimes it gets stuck in some mode that no matter what I copy into X and I try and paste into Aqua, it just keeps copying or pasting that same line of text over and over again. And even if I try and highlight and copy something else under X and paste it in, it just keeps going back to that same one, and I gotta kill the X server and bring it back up again so that I can free some kind of buffer in there that gets stuck.
Yeah, I agree. I couldn't describe to you without trying it. It seems like sometimes the copy and paste works well, sometimes it doesn't. But when it does work, it's great, because then it's almost like having, three different kinds of machines on your desktop at the same time.
Right. And what really stinks is when you highlight something in the X server and you press the middle mouse button to copy it into the an Aqua application, but it doesn't work because OS X doesn't support the middle mouse paste click like X does.
Yeah.
That's painful.
One thing I saw recently, I don't know if you guys have tried it, and I have to try to remember the name. There's a, have you tried the, there's an equivalent to VMware for the Mac, although VMware is porting their software to the Mac, and I think it's called Parallel something. I'm looking it up now as we chat. But like VMware, it for the Intel-based Macs, you can run Solaris, you can run Linux, and they were offering free downloads of the beta. It seemed pretty cool.
I'd be very interested in that. Unfortunately, I don't have an Intel-based Mac. But if you want to send me one, I'll test it out for you.
Yeah, but it's that's like, yet another cool thing. I'm sure that someone will take it the other way once the and you'll be able to run virtual Mac on top of Linux somewhere. Someone will figure it out.
Somebody had posted in the IRC that it's Parallels, Parallels. Is the software you're talking about? Now, are you up to speed on the Intel Macs?
I get Macworld, and I have yet to try the Intel Mac. So my knowledge is not firsthand, just what I've read.
Because I had heard something the other day, and I think it was on Lug Radio, that they said that. They had an Ubuntu developer on there who said that the reason why there aren't any Intel Mac Linux distributions out there yet is because the Intel Mac requires booting from an HFS Plus file system, and they don't have a way to write or I guess legally write that for Linux. Were you aware of that? Do you have any information on that?
No, I hadn't heard about that.
Oh, okay. Link's falling apart over here. Sorry about that.
He's beeping. He's falling apart.
He's just going to hell over here.
Sorry about that, Link.
Yeah.
So what are the hottest issues that any Linux magazine has to go through? One of the hottest issues, controversial issue, is in regards to the ads that they accept and whether or not to accept ads from certain companies like Microsoft in the magazine or on their website. Has that been a difficult choice for Linux Magazine to make?
We've had Microsoft ads repeatedly in the magazine, and we're currently run Microsoft ads on the website as well. And whenever we run a Microsoft ad, we always get some number of people that decide they want to cancel the magazine or send us flame mail. And I know Linux, wasn't Linux World, was it Linux.com or?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, I know it came up within the last month or so that that someone had taken the Microsoft Get the Facts ad, and that's the one that's running on our site as well right now. And you know, we've always had a separation between editorial and sales, and you know, will we turn down their ad? You know, no, not really.
Because it's money. And money keeps the magazine going.
It's money, and then I think, you know, when you start picking and choosing, you know, where do you draw the line? But I think, too, you know, we are critical of Microsoft. Sometimes we're, you know, I write editorials about Microsoft. I know that Burlow often takes Microsoft to task. But we also take Sun and Red Hat and other people to task as well. So editorially, you know, we've taken on, you know, companies that are just doing dumb stuff. And that can include Microsoft and SCO and Sun and whoever. We've also run ads from Apple, from Oracle, from Red Hat, from Dell, IBM. We, you know, had all the majors, all the large companies advertise, including.
Fair enough. So as you look out, you know, in the 7 years that you've been, that Linux Magazine has been going strong, and you're looking towards the future, Do you see exciting times ahead for Linux? I mean, it seems to be a lot of companies are starting to jump on the bandwagon and starting to really make inroads in other countries. Do you see good outlooks?
Yeah, I do. I think that the U.S. is probably... I mean, the U.S. is certainly something that each of us kind of pays a lot of attention to and is the hub of most of the computer industry, but Europe, I think the European Commission is taking Microsoft to task very seriously, maybe even more so than the Justice Department. China, India, you know, India I haven't heard really very much about. It'd be interesting to take a look again at it, but certainly for China, Spain, Brazil, England, I'm trying to think some of the countries that we've covered where, you know, entire, you know, municipalities are adopting Linux or, I mean, China is very aggressively pursuing it. So they don't, a lot of countries don't want Microsoft, in their country. So I think, you know, as far as I can tell, it'll probably displace Unix I think the virtualization is very important. And that discounts even probably the more important kinds of computing, things like mobile devices, things that are very small, that will probably be the way that most people interact with a computer in the future. And that's, you know, that I don't think anybody really likes to partner with Microsoft for doing those kinds of things.
So I
think, you know, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, finish with your thought there.
Oh, no, I was going to say the server, I think, you know, is a slam dunk. It has been for a while. I don't think there's any question about adopting it anymore, which is different than, say, even 2 years ago when you still saw some hesitancy. The desktop for headless kinds of machines, I think it's perfectly fine for transactional workers, for office workers. You know, it's still, I don't think it's really a replacement yet for Windows and the Mac. But, you know, like with Scribus, it makes leaps and bounds progress. I just think it's one of those things where it's just hard to displace Windows. It's just hard.
And so you don't expect to be seeing any displacement of Windows on the consumer desktop for a while yet, then?
No, I think, you know, I wrote a recent editorial that if I bought a new computer for my dad, and he's not a I've given him a Mac before, and he has a PC, and, you know, the Mac is just not his favorite thing. He's just not that comfortable with it, although that's what I would have preferred to buy him, because it's just so easy to maintain. And, you know, could I give him Linux instead of Windows? There's just enough things that he needs to do that aren't easily done on Linux that I don't think that would be a workable solution for him. So I think it has a little ways to go yet.
But hopefully it'll get there soon. What are some of the biggest hurdles that you see with Linux on the general desktop?
I think hardware support. I mean, it can be daunting, even for experienced people. I think sometimes to just, you know, to get the right thing working, there needs to be probably a few more applications need some more polish to be able to get to the level of their Windows counterparts. Installation needs to be easier. And third-party devices, there's just a ton out there. Most of them are compatible with Windows, and some can be, you know, a pretty good challenge to get working with Linux. Just look at a PCMCIA, you know, wireless card. They can be a challenge. If you buy the right one, it works just fine. You plug it in and it works. If you don't, then you really got to work at making it work. So this needs to be more ubiquity, you know, easier to just turn it on and go. But I do think, you know, I'm sure you have experienced this as well, that for most people, the browser is the computer now, and, you know, that's perfectly fine for most people. There's no reason that the Linux solution wouldn't work for them. But, you know, if they plug in their camera or they try to get on wireless, there's just enough things that make it difficult. So, yeah, those are the things I think that are tough.
So, what is Linux Magazine's stance on that? I mean, are you guys, you know, looking to usher, you know, people into the Linux world, or, you know, you want to cater more towards the seasoned Linux user?
We continue to aim at people whose job it is to work with Linux, so we continue to aim at system administrators, developers, we do have, I think, very good coverage. I think Jason Perlow does an excellent job of covering desktop issues. He's covered VMware. He's covered the iPod. He's covered getting DVD stuff to work on the desktop. We have a shell column. You know, so we cover quite a bit, but I would say that we really look at trying to make the professional's job easier. So I think we will continue to cover desktop things and cover really hard problems, like some of the ones I mentioned, but otherwise, I think we'll continue to focus on professionals and not end users so much.
So, are there any big plans for Linux Magazine coming up? Any new columns that you we should be aware of?
You know, every so often we go through and take an audit of what we want to cover. The scripting languages, the field often shifts in scripting languages, so. But they're also, you know, those things are also well covered in many other areas. So we try to balance, you know, where can we really add value. You know, I'd love to do more with MySQL 5 because I think it's got some really amazing features and continues to be extremely affordable for most people. We're just wrapping up the third, actually the June issue will have the third in the series of features on MySQL 5's enterprise-like features. Nothing comes to mind for me to mention at the moment, but people often ask for more coverage in Java, PHP, Python, Ruby, technology, reports on technology. One thing that we try to do as well is introduce technology as well as show how to use it. So July's issue will have a feature on the Atom syndication protocol, for example, both how to use it and what makes it work. But nothing, no big changes right now come to mind.
All right. Distribution of your magazine. How is that handled? I mean, obviously you're dependent upon a third company for distributing to the newsstands. Am I correct?
Right, right.
Because I noticed
there are two, and their names escape me at the moment. But there are two companies responsible for distribution in the United States. Ingram is one. And I can't remember the other, but the other, they're the two largest magazine distributors in the U.S.
And
they're the ones that are...
What bums me out is for the longest time, I held back on getting a subscription to Linux Magazine because I would always go out and buy it at this local grocery store here. It was Wegmans.
Right.
And I always felt like, man, if I keep buying it there, it's going to encourage them to keep it on the shelf so that more people would see it and maybe buy it. And as the month went by, you know, I'd see people buying the magazine, and for some reason, a couple months ago, they stopped carrying it, and it really bummed me out.
Yeah, I don't know all the vagaries, whether they're, you know, certainly if you walk into Barnes & Noble, they're always there. I don't know about some of the smaller ones. If you're interested, I can ask and see how that works. It's not something I deal with on a regular basis. So, that store may have decided, you know, to shift things, or the magazine distributor in that area may have said, you know, this is just not selling well enough for us to carry it at all. Period. It's hard to say.
And I really enjoy reading your magazine on a monthly basis. I mean, Jeremy Garcia's column, the shell scripting stuff. I mean, I really find that that really, you know, great stuff. And the editorials in there are a good read, too.
And what's up with that Jeremy Garcia guy? He's kind of a punk, don't you think?
Is your mic turned on over there?
It is now, yeah.
Oh.
You can't tell. You can't hear me in your headphones, though.
Do you work closely with Jeremy Garcia?
Sorry, ask me again?
Do you work closely with Jeremy Garcia?
No. I mean, I've known Jeremy sort of at a distance for a while. He's written that column maybe going on 2 years now. So
when do you guys go out and solicit articles from people, or do you take article submissions from the Linux population? I mean, how if somebody wanted to write an article for Linux Magazine, how would they go about doing that?
It's fairly straightforward. If someone was interested in writing for us, they would drop me a line through email and say, you know, this is what I want to write about. The process of writing an article is someone can come to us with a suggestion. We agree that that's something interesting. We ask for an outline to flesh things out a little bit. Once the outline is approved, then they go to a first draft, and then they'll go to a final draft. So it's perfectly fine for someone to come and say, this is what I want to write about. But generally, we don't accept submissions cold. We like to work with people to make sure that the articles are crafted to fit our editorial style. But, a lot of the writers who have written for us in the past come back and ask, you know, if I'm doing something new. In fact, Steve Best from IBM wrote a feature in June about SystemTap. And he's written about file systems for us before. He just dropped me a note and said, this is something I've been working on. Would you be interested? And it's like, yeah, this is great. This is profiling the kernel. Great. And so pretty easy. Just drop me a note, and we'll fit it in the calendar, make sure that it fits our style. And
Are there certain easy topics that you're looking for? Is, you know, some kind of hot topics that, you know, people who might be interested in that and are working up stuff would know that would be the thing to contact you about? Or
yeah, they can look on the website. There's an editorial calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that we've identified as being interesting topics. And then, you know, most of the people that write for us do development for a living, and they know best, or they're facing the problems that other people will face in a short time. And I'm always happy to move the calendar around to try to get a really interesting topic into the mix.
So if you go to the Linux Magazine website, you look at the editorial calendar, and I noticed that for September, the issue topic is distributions. And there's three featured stories listed there. Now, those featured stories you have already commissioned, those are going in there. Am I correct?
Depending on how far the editorial calendar is out, like September will kind of come onto my radar in about a month. And it may be that some of those are assigned and have to look, and some of them may not be assigned. So it's best just to ask and see if something has been assigned or not.
So what I'm saying there is if you're, somebody's like, looks like it's an issue about distributions, I might have an article about a specific distribution or about Linux distributions in general, they would send you an email, so to speak, with maybe an outline in there, an explanation of, you know, what kind of article they'd like to write, and then you proceed from there.
Yep, very easy. Very easy. They can tell me what, you know, why is it interesting, what they want to write about. I'll help them meet some of the editorial guidelines for the magazine, and then go from there.
Cool. Now, is it been difficult? Do you have to pay attention to what's going on in the other Linux magazines that are out there, so that maybe you're not as replicating some of the other information that they're doing? I mean,
I don't subscribe to the European ones, although I think I get for some reason it stopped, but I don't get the British Linux magazine anymore. I subscribe to Linux Journal, what they are interested in. Sometimes we get synchronicity happenings, and they'll run a story either before us or they'll run a story after us. But again, we usually are focused on our own calendar and don't pay too much attention to what other people are doing.
So that's not too much of a concern. I mean, but the chances of you guys writing the exact same article content in the same month are pretty slim.
Yeah, I think, sometimes they may cover something a month ahead, or they may cover it after we cover it. It has happened, but I don't think we've ever had the same thing in the same month. Not that I can remember, anyway.
So it must keep you really busy over there.
I didn't catch the last part.
I'm sorry. I said it must keep you really busy over there.
I do get busy. I do indeed get busy. But we're always happy to have new people write for us, especially experts in the area. I think that's one thing that that makes us different as well. We have people like Steve Best and Ken Kaur. We've had people who helm projects. Andrew Ware from Zen has written for us. You pick up the magazine, and generally, if it's generally it's an expert or the project leader who's writing about the technology for us, which is great. And there's a zillion open source projects and experts in each one, and we'd love to have them write for us.
Yeah, just you get all that information right off the linuxmagazine.com, linux-mag.com website, under the Contribute tab.
That's right.
So now, are you using Linux in your day-to-day life at home?
I do. Almost all of the production stuff, the website runs on Linux. So I tend to, for my own personal productivity, I tend to use the Mac OS X mail. If I have to write a letter, I probably will generate it in Pages and that kind of thing. But the applications I generally have open most of the time are a MySQL browser pointed at R2 servers, a shell window open to do backups and maintenance on the servers, email, aliases, the usual sysadministration stuff always takes some time as well.
And you're doing that all at home?
The machines are located out in Colorado, the servers, but otherwise, I do. I work from home.
Oh.
And everything through the web, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
So then you don't actually have to go into an office anywhere.
No, I used to. When I was living in San Francisco, our office is there, and we would do production together in person. But now I live on the East Coast, and so everything is virtual. For me, at least. It's virtual.
That's nice. That must be nice.
No kidding. I don't know what it is today, man. I can't talk. I can't freaking get my code to work. I can't
fired.
You can't disable your freaking sound card with the beeps?
Link's having a problem getting his Windows machine working.
The beeps don't come out of the sound card.
Speaker.
Oy, oy, oy. So anything else you'd like to add about Linux Magazine?
No, I would just say if our listeners are already subscribed, we appreciate everybody reading and appreciate everybody going to the website. And like I said, there's 7 years worth of technical articles. We have a newsletter that goes out every week with new material, and you can subscribe. Just take 2 minutes, register, and enjoy.
Question about that. What, as a magazine, what do you prefer, subscribers or people buy it off the news rack? I mean, what seems to work better for you?
You mean like from a financial point of view? I think, you know, both. Subscribers are nice. The revenue is gives you money to work with. People at the newsstand, maybe new readers that come in. I think you need to have both.
All right, fair enough. Martin, I want to thank you for coming on. We appreciate it. We're not by any means kicking you off here. You're welcome to stay on as long as you want. We usually keep going until about 10:30 Eastern time. You're welcome to chime in on some of the other topics we're going to talk about tonight if you'd like. It's up to you.
Yeah, well, I have some deadlines for tomorrow morning, so I'm going to drop off. But if you want subscriptions for the host, just send me their names and addresses, and I'm happy to set that up for everybody.
Nice.
I appreciate that. Hey. That's a damn good magazine.
We love free stuff.
You just went number one
Linux magazine in the world.
That's it.
Would be Linux Magazine US. You don't even want to look at the rest of them.
Unless you're right for them.
And that's what we say here
that's
at the
it.
Tech Show.
So we appreciate it. We thank you for coming on. And, you know, we love Linux Magazine
Son
over here.
Son of a guy.
I think
you just made our corporate sponsor list, too, didn't you? I went to check that out.
But, you know, keep doing a great job. We really appreciate it.
Well, anytime. I'm glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was great talking to you, and we'd love to be able to contact you again, you know, sometime and get some updates on what's going on.
Yeah.
That'd be all right.
Feel free. Thanks so much.
Thank
you. Talk to you again. Bye-bye.
Speaking of articles, Dan's article came out.
Dan's article.
Well, it came out a couple weeks ago, I guess, for the rest of the world. But
you know, I went to two different places,
who subscribe.
And they didn't have it. I was kind of bummed.
It took a long time to come out here,
I got the very last one today.
Everybody in the Valley heard. They had to get out there and get it.
The very
You know what I didn't understand?
If you send it in, Dan will be signing it.
Well, we
want to
have, like, a huge response, right? And we want them to run out completely so that they go, shit. You know,
I bought two copies.
The only thing different between this magazine and the last time is that we had Dan Washko publish an article. Maybe we should, get a hold of him again.
I went to Barnes & Noble. Borders Barnes & Noble. They said the article was, the magazine was supposed to hit the shelves March 31st.
Right.
And every time I went in the past 3 weeks, it was the same two issues.
Gone, yeah.
The same two damn issues, like the last 2 months' issues there. It wasn't until, like, this week that I actually found it. And I almost didn't find it because I'm like, oh, that looks like the same damn issue that has been out for the past 2.5 months. So But then I picked it up and looked at it, and I'm like, oh, wait, yeah, that's the one.
So Barnes & Noble on Route 33 had, like, Linux Journal magazines from, like, 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's because I got there right before you did, Pat, and I picked
you
up.
You bastard.
The very last Linux Pro.
They didn't have it by the one by my office.
So I ran right out after work because, you know, Alan was on the spot with it. He's like, oh, yeah, I went and picked it up. So I ran right out.
Yeah, I had to look for it because it was, like, hidden behind other magazines and stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
I have to get
you get there in the evening, and everybody's just throwing magazines back in the racks.
Hidden behind the 15,000 windows of Mac and Adobe Photoshop.
You know, nothing and bring it in here so Dan can autograph.
They have quite a bit of Linux magazines at Barnes & Noble. I'll give credit to them.
Yeah,
they do. Yeah, it's a good place. In fact, I, you know, rack a $50 bill there every month.
Yeah, I was
going through all the magazines. You know,
but you know what? I don't know. Like, I remember when I used to get, like, the other kind of magazines, like PC Magazine and a few of the other ones. And there's a magazine that the MCSC person or the MCP person gets at work called Redmond. The one with the spam on the front cover all the time. Ugh. Like, you got that, that
it's called Redmond sucks.
You got that pseudo half cover. You got the magazine cover, and there's a wraparound half cover that's nothing but a giant ad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, yeah, oh, yeah, it's, yeah, it's, yeah, the, it's the magazine equivalent of a pop-up ad.
Right.
And I looked through these others, and, you know, no matter what Linux magazine I pick up, always find something, you know, like, the information is pretty in-depth. It's really cool. It's very useful.
Turn the fan on high for
a little
bit.
It's technical, but I don't see that in the other magazines. Like, I sure as hell ain't going to get something, you know, the equivalent in PC Magazine.
No. No. Could you imagine, like, a Windows magazine like that?
Oh. Like, you, I'm looking at the wrong magazine.
Sorry about the fan noise, everybody. We're degassing the room.
The coleslaw and sweet potatoes are kicking in.
And I do believe Teabag's still on, if I'm not mistaken. Yes?
You teabagging who?
Hey!
Yeah,
stop
he's still
that.
There. Hey, I got something to bring up. And,
I think you just did.
When is
who turned on the jet engine?
That was Pat's ass, is what they're trying to clear out of here. But when is Security Monkey coming on?
Security Monkey is going to be on the 10th.
The 10th.
The show that's on the 10th, right? Let me.
And sounds right.
It's on the calendar, right? Did I not put it on the calendar?
I don't look at the calendar because I expect to get it right from the horse's mouth.
10th, Security Monkey will be on. He even gives you like a little information, a link to his web blog and all kinds of stuff.
All right. Did he change his podcast feed or something? Because I haven't had a...
No, he hasn't done one. He's going to release one, I think, this week. He's trying to get
better damn well release one. Anyway, if you're at all... subscribe to Network World, and if I'm not mistaken, this is one of those things that costs you like $600 a year for the subscription.
Or they give it to you for free.
Give it to you for filling out a
survey
or something.
Yeah.
But and I'm gonna. I should probably tiny URL this. It's a legitimate tiny URL. Hold on.
You always be suspect.
Yeah.
Never ever open up links from Dan while you're at work.
I know, really, man.
Never.
HR sees that, man, ever. they'll walk me to the door.
Oh no, this is a legitimate tiny URL.
Never.
Sure
ever.
Is.
Yeah, no, it
right.
is.
It's gonna be.
It's,
he was talking about teabagging earlier. I would be suspect if I were you.
The April 17th edition of Network World on the front cover. Is an article called "Does Open Source Encourage Rootkits?" And in a nutshell, of course, it's a
bullshit, right?
No way. Now, security vendor McAfee says the blame for the prevalent increase of rootkits falls squarely on the open source community.
Oh, come on.
Of course they say that. They get paid to say that.
Now, what they're talking about is the open source community basically coming together with regards to security issues in rootkit and posting rootkit source code on their website and having security professionals and hackers or anybody being able to view this and test out the rootkits and see what's going on. And generally, basically what he's saying is you're seeing a proliferation of rootkits, and one of the reasons is because the open source community is sharing the information that they find regarding rootkits. Now, one of the contrary opinions in this article is that, first off, if your rootkit shows up on an open source website, in a sense, that renders that rootkit pretty much no good because they know about it, they can analyze it, they can fix it, and if you're using a rootkit from an open source website, you know, you're the equivalent of a rootkit script kiddie.
Yeah, you're done.
And at that point, you know, there should be security already in place to prevent said rootkit because it's already been analyzed.
You're dumb.
With some regards. Now... we're starting to see this more and more, you know, a lot, that security companies, McAfee, Symantec, are coming out talking specifically about open source, about Linux, FreeBSD, and saying as these alternative operating systems, they like to call them, gain more popularity, you're going to see more exploits, more viruses, more rootkits affecting these operating systems. And primarily the reason we are not seeing this today is because they are not popular enough to attract the attention of these of the virus writers, of the malware writers.
Sure.
And, you know, what it almost comes off as sounding like in this article right here, the McAfee is basically saying that, and you know, because we're looking at these rootkits and looking at the source of these rootkits, we're taking away one of the most important levels of security, and that's the security by obscurity. That's what it sounds like they're saying here. The reason why we're seeing a proliferation of rootkits is because the source code is out in the mainstream for the general population.
So Linux's fault, man.
So expect to see more problems because we're not keeping it locked up and quiet. But you know, we are seeing a lot of that. You know, what's your guys' opinions on that? I'd like to hear our listeners' opinions on that. Email us. You know, post on the forum. Send us some audio comments.
Hey, cut Sony some slack, man. The PlayStation 3 will run Linux. All right.
No.
We'll see. Right.
But
I haven't seen one land anywhere yet. So.
But they're basically
sometime
what they're
in
saying,
November. That's what they're saying.
They're saying it's not a matter of if a rootkit or a virus is going to affect Linux, it's when. And it's game over then.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys hear about the supposed Firefox security hole? It causes the browser to crash. And they're trying to compare it to the Internet Explorer security issues. They're like
Which one?
Yeah, exactly. They're completely two different planes, man. You know, oh my God, Firefox, you know, crashed on me. Oh, I'll have to restart it.
Woo.
Internet Explorer, what? My sister's been taking over.
I don't know.
So you guys, I see by your lack of interest in discussing security, you know, rootkits, VirEye, malware on top of Linux, you don't think it's much of a concern?
Because people seem to shit
their pants whenever it comes up.
It's because people do that because they don't understand, right? And they people that haven't used Linux or Unix for a long time just don't understand how it works. And they don't. Most people don't understand how a virus does what it does anyway. And it's just not the same kind of system as it is with Windows or with Macintosh, where you have root access to everything on your system. Unless, of course, you're stupid and running your system as root on a Unix type system.
Well, I mean, it is possible to get rootkitted in Linux. I mean, because I've got hacked into.
Right.
I was on a dial-up line.
Right.
It's just one of those things that just happened to, you know.
I did too, but I was running Red Hat 6.2 with an open Telnet client for an entire weekend with, I had like a user called test with a password of test or something like that.
That's,
you know,
how
what I mean?
They'll do it.
It's when you do something stupid.
It was during my Red Hat days that I got nailed. But you know, I wasn't doing anything, you know, out of the ordinary. I just had a stock Red Hat install.
See, you know, I never had any problems with a stock install ever. It was me doing a retarded, you know, pulling a retarded move that got me hacked the one time I was hacked. And I was relying at that time on security through obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I figured, I'm on a dial-up line. Who the hell is going to hack
me? That was the same with me.
AOL dial-up connection, right?
And all of a sudden, you know, my disk is freaking out, and you know, the machine is not responding at all.
It's making clicking noises.
Oh, the disk was just going wild on it.
But you know, as it is now,
everything in the bin directory was like changed over to his own programs.
With open source, you know, the source code is there. You could do what you want with it. It could be good. It could be bad. It's up to you, you know?
Yeah, I just really... It's a lot tougher now.
You know, just because Microsoft, you know, looks the other way when it's a security vulnerability, you know, doesn't mean it's not there, you know? It's there, and it's being exploited, you know, on thousands of machines.
So let's say 5 years from now, Linux gains a 30% market share. So now you start having Joe user, average Joe user, using Linux. Doesn't matter what distribution. Do you think that we'll start seeing a proliferation of security issues because Joe user's using it? And if that would be the case, well, we gain popularity. Joe user's using it, might be more prone to using it under an admin or root account. Might not be so concerned with security as much as everybody else because they're not educated enough. As we make it more usable.
Running Linspire.
Yeah, see, I think
but free spot.
I think things would have to change considerably for that to, you know, for that to be a problem.
Free Spire is not going to have root on by default, by the way.
Well,
yeah, I know.
I mean, I don't know how Linspire. I've never used it, and from what I heard, you have a choice in the
asks you, do you want to set up another user account?
And you know, with something like Ubuntu, I mean, when you create an account in Ubuntu, you have the capability of running sudo to install software.
And it's very annoying.
I have no problem with that. I would rather be prompted for like that type of password than to be running as root, so to speak. You know, generally on my systems, I don't run as root on any of my systems. You know. And I'd rather see that. That's the way OS X primarily operates. It's kind of like a pseudo-type environment. If you're going to install software, if you're an admin person, you have the admin rights, you have to provide your password before you can install any software. You know, and I know there's limitations of sudo, but it beats the hell out of running straight as root.
You know, I see what the point of sudo is, but it's, I don't know. I think I know what I'm doing enough to when I want to do root, you know. I don't need the software to decide for me, but I could see the point where they want general users not to become root.
Right. And on my systems downstairs, my wife has admin capability, but my daughter's account does not on my Ubuntu system. And but now, let's turn that around. If we're saying, because we take some basic security issues to mind, and we're more focused on security issues, do you think that people running Windows had, you know, if they were more concerned about those security issues, if they weren't running as admin-level accounts in Windows, that there would be less of an issue on the Windows side of things? Or is their operating system inherently flawed that even if you're not running as an admin user, if you're running as a power user or a general user, you're still going to have to worry about malware and viruses to the extent that you are today?
My opinion Windows is it's flawed. I don't think there's anything you can do to fix it.
Yeah, no kidding.
So generally, people think it's an issue. You guys think it's a flaw in the design of Microsoft's product.
The problem with Windows is that if you run it as a non-privileged user, nothing works, basically. It's the legacy issue.
Yeah, it was always just designed as a single user anyway, so...
For crap's sake, man, Windows didn't even have a TCP/IP stack until they stole it from BSD.
Exactly.
You know?
They didn't do very good at that either.
No, they didn't.
So the whole thing that comes back to the issue of viruses, malware, all that, you guys not concerned? Linux
not
platform?
Not really,
no.
OS X platform, not really concerned?
Don't run OS X.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you look at it, part of the selling points of OS X, you hear time and again, is...
As of right now, I'm not concerned with that one.
The same security issues, but, you know, when you look at the market,
eventually, people will try to do stuff with that. Whether they're successful about it, I don't know.
I mean, there's been some proof of concepts on both ends, OS X,
yeah.
But so far, nothing has...
Nothing's out there in the wild.
In the wild, that is... impacted all these.
Yeah, and I don't think something is going to come out. Something's going to catch them off guard. They're going to find all these, you know, holes that have been sitting around for years that they didn't bother to patch, and I think the same thing can happen in Linux, though. Eventually, somebody's going to pull off something that's going to work and it's going to catch people off guard. Difference being is in Linux, it'll be patched in a couple of days and it won't work again.
And it's isolated to a certain degree.
Well, I mean, no. If somebody's going to nail something that's going to work across the board, whatever it is. But, again, it's going to be patched in a day or so, and you know the smart people will patch it, and it'll never happen again.
So. Sure, it'll get fixed in, like, 2 days, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, which brings to the point of, was it a couple weeks ago, there was that big concern that this cross-platform proof-of-concept virus was released, or worm. And it affects all versions of Linux prior to the kernel 2.6.16. And it's cross-platform. It runs on both Windows and Linux. And it was the first proof of concept of this type of worm or virus. And the reaction from the Linux community has been more of, well, hey, that's a pretty good idea to be able to run something on both platforms. I mean, you had...
Now can I make regular programs, Windows programs, do that without doing
Linus,
one?
Linus, who was interested, you know, looking at this and said, well, the reason why it's not running on 2.6.16 is because there's an issue with GCC.
Yeah, he went about fixing it.
And he went and fixed it.
He fixed it so it actually did run.
But the point is, they're not concerned. And it seems like, you know, from what I've read, they're not concerned because it's really almost a non-issue. If you're stupid enough to run as root and execute an application... you're not sure of, then, you know...
Then you deserve
it. Then the hell with you.
The hell with you, yeah.
you deserve it at that point.
But if you look on the opposite side of the fence, here you are as a Windows user. Turn on your computer, and what is it? Within 60 seconds, you could be infected with a worm without even doing anything. Just being connected to the internet.
That's the problem there, because you can you can get all these things without having to do anything, no matter how careful you may be.
Yeah. Right. As Linux users, are we immune to that?
At this point, I think we are. In the future, we may not be, but
and
right now,
I
think we are.
A false, you know, hope there. Doesn't that hurt
man,
you?
Can I just say something?
Oh, it's killing me, man.
You got
see, you've worn out your welcome, but of course you could say something.
what did you say that broke out there?
I said, you've worn out your welcome, but of course you can say so. No, go ahead. Say
okay,
something, man. I want to hear what you say.
Okay. You're continuing talking about is something going to happen in 5 years or something. You always look to the future if something would happen. Well, since 1995, when the Apache Web Server project was started, since then Apache has just been gaining in popularity all over. And today, and for the last 5 years or something, 70% of the world's or something around there has been running off. 70% of the world's web servers has been running on Apache. And nothing's come out, so there.
So there, damn
oh,
it.
Oh, I think, only one or two worms or something like that. They were patched in like 2 hours.
But is that a fair comparison?
Absolutely.
Is it?
I agree.
Is it a
absolutely
fair comparison?
You
we're
know
talking,
why it's a fair
we're
comparison?
Servers as opposed to general desktop
but
users.
You know why it's a fair comparison? Because you really have to define the apples and oranges that you're talking about between Windows and Linux. Windows is a closed proprietary system with buggy, inefficient code, and a bad security design. And Linux is an open system with the most brilliant programmers in the world working on it. And an open design that anybody can look at to make sure that no one's trying to pull some weird shit. And, you know, that's the big difference here. That's why things, and you know, it's got a better security design because there's no immediate, you know, there's no immediate super user access for everybody to do everything.
Well, that's what I said before. You know, if something happens, it will be taken care of very quickly. It's not going to be one of these. What's the one virus that's still running around that everybody's blocking ports
pick
on?
Pick one. I mean, every damn virus that Windows ever has is still running.
Pick which one. But
I'll wear the week.
All of them
last
are still running.
Yeah, but
yeah, that one.
I think the example of Apache is not a fair example because, by and large, most people that run an Apache server invest a little bit of time in understanding Apache server and understanding more of the security
issues.
I
don't think that's true.
But you're looking at a server as opposed to the general desktop user.
I think it was harder to configure IIS than it is to configure Apache.
I don't think it's hard.
Takes five seconds, right?
I'm not saying it's hard to, hard to configure, but in order to run an Apache server, you got to be comfortable with getting down there on the command line, with actually installing it, so to speak, and configuring it from the command line. People who take those steps that are going to do that tend to have a better understanding of how, you know, an operating system like Linux or FreeBSD or any of the BSDs operate. Ergo, you know, they're a more sophisticated user. They're more versed in, you know, more in tune with security issues. Not saying that that's always the case, but here you have the desktop users. So you have, you know, in a comparison, you know, per Apache server, how many desktop users do you have running Windows? Is it a viable comparison? And if you infect one Apache server, you know, how is that compared to, you know, it's not a one-to-one comparison here. You can infect 1,000 desktops and get more of desired effect out of what the worm does. Or the
so then,
does
you know, so then compare the desktops server. To desktops. I don't think I don't think they're even in the same ballpark with desktops to desktops. Windows gets infected in, you know, 30 or 40 seconds wide open on net when you first get it. Linux can run, you know, years and years and years without anybody ever getting in it. On a default install, default configuration, nobody touched anything weird or anything like that. I'm talking default on both of them. If Windows comes in a Dell box, you plug it into your internet, you turn it on.
It's infected.
You know, in 40 seconds it's infected. You get Linux on the box, default install. No one did anything but set a password.
Man.
Yeah.
No one said
but
anything,
the thing
but,
is, yeah,
but it's faster
but
than AIDS in Africa or
but
something.
But the
you know?
Opposite argument right there would say, well, the reason why is because, you know, 95% of the world's running Windows. It's the target. It's the one to infect. Because
but see, I don't think so because
it's a crapshoot.
If you looked at it statistically, I think that, you know, we do a one-by-one comparison. If you have, you know, one Windows box and one Linux box, the Windows box is going to get hammered first. It's just the way it's
going. I actually did
that
test.
You did?
Yeah, it was about, I think, 6 months ago. I took my sister's laptop and stuck it on the internet directly, and along with my Linux and my SUSE box, and it was just like the Windows box, it took 5 seconds. And boom, I got the restart dialogue.
Oh, yeah? All right,
yeah.
Now contrast that, Dan, to our honeypot box that we had up here. How long did that sit?
Months,
with
right?
With a default
long
install
enough,
on
long
the
enough
internet?
To forget the password.
Yeah.
For
well,
a long
time. No, that was a Red Hat install, too.
Time, yeah.
Fedora.
That was the one that everybody was saying, oh, well, you know, we could put Fedora on there. Everybody can hack Fedora. No freaking way, man. It sat there until we forgot the password and had to shut it off.
What I needed to do, I should have had my wife create an account on there called Test, with a password test. Then the SSH kitties could have come through there.
I think even then you'd have had to wait
for
a while.
Open up Telnet.
Right?
Yeah, open up Telnet.
Test, open up Telnet. Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, at that point, you're making it too easy for
them. It's an interesting topic for conversation because, you know, you have it seems to be like a split. There's a lot of people saying, you know, both inside the community, outside the community, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
You see,
as we gain more popularity.
I think they're full of shit.
I think they're full of shit, too, man.
I think they're full of shit. But even on the off chance that they are not full of shit, that it is when, okay, the simple fact is that because the architecture of Linux is open, the flaw, whatever it may be, if indeed there ever will be one like that, will be fixed in minutes. You know what I mean? And then it'll be all done and over with, right? But the simple fact that the architecture is open means that there are thousands and thousands of people who are doing beta testing and reviewing code.
Right.
Before anything would happen.
We aren't talking about,
you know what I mean?
Those people. We're talking about Joe General User. who doesn't even run their Windows.
It doesn't matter what Joe General User does.
Well, yes,
we're talking
does.
About the people who are reviewing the code outside of his knowledge.
Right, right. But if you're saying they find an exploit, they patch it, done.
Right.
But what if you have 30,000 users out there that don't update their system?
Why wouldn't they update their system?
Because they're Joe Average users.
They
don't
even
pay
update
attention.
Their system on Windows.
But they,
you can't expect just, if somebody can update it on Windows.
If systems reliably under Windows, it wouldn't be as much of a problem.
Bullshit. The updates create even more holes.
Yes.
You were I can't speak tonight. At your work, you run Novell, right?
Yes.
Have they talked to you about something they call App Armor?
Right. App Armor.
That is the basic. Yeah, that's basically a little something called intrusion prevention system. For example, it when it's running and it's basically a little kernel module you load and then run a service also. What it does is that it specifies, for example, when you launch Firefox, it makes sure that Firefox can only access these files and these folders, so it couldn't be used to exploit anything. It would just hang or crash or whatever. Or you can also say, regarding to this talk here, since the architecture is open, as Link says, we can start saying, what can we do to prevent these issues? And what do you think we could do to prevent viruses and spyware and crap?
What do I think?
Yeah, but also the other guys.
You know, honestly, you know, when I read these articles and you know, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, I honestly think that of course, there's always room for improvement, but I think the system is pretty good, and it's going in the right direction. If you just, you know, again, not running as root user is the first step towards not having serious problems with your system.
Damn good step, yep.
Right, and, you know, go ahead.
Also, there was a flaw in KDE here for a few, I think 2 months ago. I received an update from SUSE like 2 hours after the exploit was published.
Yeah, and I commend the open source community. I think they're top notch and they're on the ball with their patching of their security exploits. And I don't think there's any other, you know, type of system that's going to do it any better or faster.
There isn't, and I want to make one quick example about the architecture difference that I was talking about. Adi last year, Dan's got his little silent thing going on. Okay.
You do look like Jordy.
Yeah, I'm Jordy too. The point I wanted to make is of the last like 10 vulnerabilities, 10 Linux vulnerabilities that anybody has mentioned, right? Of those 10, I think all of them were vulnerabilities that required you to have an account on the system, all right, in order to, you know, in order to get like root access or apply a hack or whatever. You had to have an account on the system. Now, that to me should not be in the same class as like a remote exploit that they consider a remote exploit for Windows. Because like I don't go giving everybody in the world an account on my system, and if they don't have, you know, like if they don't have secure shell access and I didn't already grant them an account on my system, then those exploits don't work. You know what I'm saying? Does anybody know what the hell I'm saying? Nobody knows what the hell I'm saying. Alan's playing with his freaking knobs again. Dan's farting. Pat's
working
a fan.
No. Pat's farting. I'm trying to listen to what you're saying and read the IRC.
Sweet potatoes and coleslaw.
Sweet potatoes and coleslaw. That's what we're gonna live with
and beer.
All night. I'm going to have bad dreams about that tonight. Sweet potatoes and coleslaw.
Me and hot chocolate, not a good idea.
Well, it's good you're in Denmark then.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's always risks. There's always, you know, there's never going to be 100% secure.
Well, sure. The only way you can really absolutely guarantee your system is secure is to shut it off, you know.
And wall it up in a safe. Throw away the key and drop it at the bottom of the ocean.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You want security, man? Rip the freaking cable out of the Ethernet.
But you know
cord.
What? All it is data. And in the end, does it matter? Does it really matter?
No, because if anybody wants, you know, nude pictures of Dan, we can just send them to him. It's no problem.
We
they
can
don't have
that
to scary.
Break. They don't have to break into a
That's
server.
That's it. Hey, you
the
know what?
Successor to the hoagie guy, Dan Wasco. Yeah.
Here's something that's a little disheartening.
See, what you guys didn't hear is the original conclusion to the Hoagie Guy story, where it wasn't the Hoagie Guy shaving himself, it was Dan
doing
shaving
it.
The Hoagie
Guy. I don't think so.
It was Dan holding the razor.
That's it. Anyway, this is another kind of disheartening thing that happened this week. I've been listening to the Novell Open Audio podcast, which is good. I enjoy it. And it got me really excited about looking at some of their products coming out. And they just recently released iFolder under open source. The stuff that they've updated in GroupWise has a lot of the stuff that we're looking for, a lot of the features have been added into GroupWise. And it got me really interested in moving our web server and our email server over to the Linux platform and running Novell's Open Enterprise server on Linux. And I've been told all along that the migration for this should be pretty easy. You know, there's tools out there to do the migration. Now, in the past, migrating Novell servers, if you're going to upgrade to a new version of Novell, it's always been kind of a crapshoot there. Yeah, you hold your breath and pray that everything goes okay and it doesn't all fall apart, because, man, is it a pain in the ass when it does, especially with the eDirectory and trying to fix that. But anyway, in the past, when we've actually done some serious upgrades to our servers, we've not only had to upgrade the operating system but upgrade the hardware. And when you move to a new server, if you want to take your Linux or your Novell system and move it onto a new server, you have to basically run a utility called server migration, which will take all the you basically set up a new server in its own tree, and you take use the server migration utility, and it essentially takes all the information off the old server, puts it on the new server, and you're good to go. Well, I was under the impression that there's a utility like that you can run that will migrate your old Novell server over to the Linux server, and I've been told repeatedly, yes, there is. But unfortunately, no, there's not. You know, because I go out and I read the documentation and everything.
Imagine that, a marketing guy trying to tell him that something exists that doesn't exist.
And
yet.
I read the documentation, yeah. And the documentation says this server utility, the source server has to be, this. Destination server has to be, it'll do Novell's Open Enterprise server running on NetWare, not running on Linux. And as I start reading more into it, my expectation was, hey, you got these services running here, you got them over here, it should be a seamless migration across. Well, it's not. And as I'm reading all the documentation on what the differences are, what works the same way, what works better, what doesn't work as well, I start thinking about this and I'm like, man, this is going to scare the shit out of all these people that are on, our NetWare and Novell admins, that they look at this stuff and they have no experience with Linux, they're going to be completely confused.
What about the Windows admins?
Well, they're already confused.
They won't care because they're running Windows, obviously, so they won't have to deal with this. And I can understand why people are going to want to, looking at this and saying, well, man, I don't understand what's going on over here. Maybe I should just jump ship and go to the Microsoft Active Directory way.
No one gets fired for using Windows.
So
it should.
It's unfortunate because I'm excited about all this stuff, and I'd like to move it over to the Linux platform, but I'm not seeing an easy method of migrating the information over there. I'm really hoping, and so far it hasn't presented itself. And, probably the biggest thing that I'm looking at is, right now they have NSS pools when people log in on a Windows machine to a Linux server or a Novell server, it automatically mounts their directories, their shares for them under drive letters. Now, if that gets moved over to a Samba-based system, now we're not using a Novell client to log in. We might have to end up using Windows access. And one of the problems I've noticed, and maybe this is just my lack of understanding Windows as much as I should, is that if you log in on a Windows machine and you connect to a share, it tries to cache that username and password information. So that if you log out and log back in again, it tries to reconnect you to that share that you have connected to. Does it not?
Wait, wait, wait. Go back a minute. Does it try and connect you to the share that you connected to?
No.
If you or does connect, it connect you to the share that you were connected to when you were connected to
it? Say you connect to a Samba share, right?
Okay.
And you're not using Active Directory.
All right.
It comes up and it asks you for a username and password. Right?
Right.
You put your username and password in.
Mm-hmm.
It logs you into that server. Now, there's an option down there to always reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't check that, the next time that you log into your machine and it wants to it still wants to reconnect to that share. Like if you rebooted, it would want to reconnect to that share. And it would pop up and your name would be in there.
I don't have that problem. If I don't check it, it doesn't want to reconnect.
Okay, but if somebody does check it, the next time you log in that machine, it's automatically going to log you in whether you want to or not.
Right, if somebody
now,
checks
in a multi-user environment, if you have somebody, if you have a machine that's being used by multiple people,
right,
and in our environment, in a Novell client, we don't have individual user accounts. The only way you could realistically do individual user accounts on the Windows system is to use an Active Directory.
Right.
So they automatically log in as a specified user account after authenticating to Novell.
Mm-hmm.
So each machine has a single user account that everybody logs into on the Windows side.
Right.
So now what happens is if they click that box to reconnect and log in,
every time
no matter
the next
who
guy
logs
in
there,
in,
it's always
going to
connect to that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to become a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't see if there's a way to turn that off, that option off under Windows, so that they're not given a choice. It's automatically no.
Well.
Maybe there is, but I don't know.
And you want to connect to a Samba share.
Well, what I'm saying is if you move over to the Linux side, it seems like
right. If you moved
over, want to be making it Samba based.
If you did that and you moved over to a Samba thing, you could just run a daily script or something that changed the damn password on the share.
If it changes the password on the share, how are people going to log in?
Well, because they're logging in the same account on the Windows computer. You want to when you want to log into the share, if you don't want it to automatically log into the share every time. Just have a script that rotates the password on the share. You put a date,
but then
on
they
the got to
put a different password in all the time.
Yeah,
but I'm not talking about. I'm talking right. about when they log in themselves. And they mount like their home directory. I want them to log in, not have to worry about rotating their password on a daily basis. That's going to be a problem. And how do you write a script?
Then you would have
that's
to do some other.
The login password.
You would have to do some other kind of authentication. Then you'd have to. You know what I mean? Each person would have to have their own password.
Well, everybody does have... Well, that's what
they'd
I'm saying.
They have their own account.
At that point right there, you're looking at having to implement some kind of Active Directory. And maybe, maybe I'm not... I'm being overly concerned about that.
I think Samba will let you do something like that now.
Well, Samba will act as an Active Directory. Can allow you to do an Active Directory lookup. But what I'm saying is we don't have Active Directory. We don't have a domain. We're not using any of that. We've all been eDirectory.
Well, fix it, Dan.
It's a
damn man.
It's a pain in the ass to fix.
Get a new thing and implement it. Come on,
Dan. You say it's a pain in the ass. What exactly do you mean? What procedures do you have to perform?
Sex with his boyfriend.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Sure.
Basically, what I'm saying is, looking at this is in order to move away from Novell on top of NetWare and eDirectory on top of Network to look at other choices, and even with Novell's own native file access, it was very simple in the past with eDirectory mounting shares from a Novell NetWare server. And now, because we've been all eDirectory, not Active Directory or any other authentication system, we're faced with, the changing times, so to speak. Now, if we go down the route of Linux, eDirectory on top of Linux, and it's sharing out Samba shares, do we have to worry about these issues, with user account related Active Directory issues and Windows login problems? Because we don't have individual accounts in an Active Directory tree. Now, if you're looking at setting up some kind of Active Directory, you know, do you do that on the Samba end? Or do you just bite the bullet and go to Windows Active Directory? Set up a domain server. Set up an Active Directory. You know, set up Active Directory. And if you go down that route, why bother with the NetWare stuff? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. What Dan said. Or something.
Because it
vicious circle. Dan's over here throwing Alan the finger. Or Alan's over here throwing Dan
it's
the finger.
It's not
fingers,
easy.
Fingers, right? Dude.
It's not
2 minutes
it's not
to go.
Easy
2 minutes to
in
go.
That in that environment.
2 minutes to midnight.
You know, because when we're running the NetWare stuff, you know, back in the older version, Windows 95, 98, you would log in through the NetWare client, and there wouldn't be a Windows login. Now, you know, with NT and XP 2000, when you log in through NetWare, you then get prompted to log into the Windows machine. Now, if you don't have local accounts on there, you have to have some kind of Windows directory service that it connects to. Either running a domain or you run an Active Directory or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're not going to run Active Directory, then you got to have a local account that they connect to. And, you're trying to make, you're trying to put on top of a Windows machine that only wants to speak one language, you know, Active Directory. You're putting another layer on there, but you still have to contend with that original Active Directory layer.
Mm-hmm. I see your conundrum.
Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I do.
So now, we've been so long in a system where we've been able to...
Bye-bye, BinRev.
Eke our way
bye-bye,
through
bye-bye.
It. But now...
Or
in
a few moments.
With
so what you're saying in a nutshell here is that you are now coming upon... the culmination of some really piss poor IT decisions.
Well, it's not so much a culmination of piss poor IT decisions. It's an issue that.
So you think that
on the Windows
you
side,
think that using eDirectory for several thousand students and making it and being completely unmanageable is a good idea?
No. Nah. You know what? In all honesty. eDirectory is incredibly easy to manage. As a directory service, it's phenomenal. It's really easy. Management is really simplified, and it's great. But the issue is, Windows requires you to either have a local account,
right,
or to run Active Directory, run an Active Directory type
and you,
service.
And you never set up Active Directory.
We've never had a reason to up until. We moved to Windows XP. Prior to that, it was 98, 95.
I think it might be in your best interest to do it. You know what? It would be in your best interest to just drop Windows. And then you could do LDAP or something like that.
Well, that's what eDirectory is.
And,
it's built on top of LDAP. And it will interact with LDAP.
Well, there you go.
But the thing is, we have primarily Windows desktops.
Get rid of Windows.
Hey,
that's the answer.
Well, I might like that, like that solution, but it's not going to... It's not going to happen. But now we're stuck.
Well,
in
apparently, if your boss doesn't like it, then apparently you're smarter than your boss. So I think you should be boss,
right?
And and you should just get rid of Windows.
But that then becomes the problem right there. If you, in order to integrate any technology in the Windows environment, you end up having to. You also have to do it the Windows way. You got to have some kind of Active Directory service.
Gore kind of said, "Just set the freaking local accounts up, damn it, Dan." Yeah. How many people is that?
But that's where we're back to at this point right here. If you set up the local account, a generic local account, we have that problem.
Right.
Or if somebody were to connect to a Samba share and click that box to, remember the password.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got a problem the next time somebody logs in. So they're not going to get their share. They're going to get the other person's share.
You're going to have to set up Active Directory. As much as it pains you, you're going to have to set it up, run it through a Samba box so that you can change stuff around real easy. But
and as much
like
as I'm
going
like,
to
like, you know, as much as I will pay my way through to do it, they're going to fight me tooth and nail about doing that on a Samba server.
Yeah, well,
they're going to want
to
run
do
it on
it,
Windows.
Do it first and make it work and then say, here I have this and it's working. This is a solution. You know, or we could spend more time and money, and maybe it would work on a Windows box, but it's already working here. We can just keep going.
That's what people did with Linux file services a few years ago.
Damn straight, that's what I did. In fact, I didn't even do that. I just set them up and let them run and never told anybody.
Exactly.
And they think, oh, yeah, I have this wonderful Windows server back in the back room. It never crashes. Well, you know why it doesn't crash? Because it doesn't run Windows. That's why it doesn't crash. But no, the suit types don't need to know that kind of stuff. That just bores them anyway, and they don't understand what's going on.
It's not the suit types I'm fighting with. It's people in my department I'm fighting with.
They're never going to know. They will never know unless you tell them. Are they really going to go over to the box and plug a monitor in and check it out just to make sure it's running Windows, or are they just going to leave their directory, Active Directory shit on it? They'll never know.
XFCE, hey, is that always 10?
Yeah. They'll never know.
But if anybody out there has any successful Novell Linux migrations, I'd be interested in hearing about them.
Yeah.
Speaking of Novell, can I say something for 2 minutes or something?
No.
SUSE.
Is it about
exactly.
SUSE?
Slackware.
Kind of.
Slackware.
Well, the link I can... SUSE was originally based on Slackware.
That's the only good part about it.
Well, it works for me.
It works for everybody, but you got to have them, those 10 CDs to get it working. That's the problem. Well,
it comes with one DVD now.
DVD. Okay, we get paid. We get your pay.
With 10.0, it's going to be 3 CDs.
That's bad. Actually, I installed it with 1 CD.
Oh!
Yeah, so.
Dan is a professional.
Slim Sousa.
Okay. Go ahead, T.
Okay. Because you mentioned, I think, 2 weeks ago or something that about Novell dropping KDE from SUSE and going to GNOME.
Mm-hmm.
I sent Pat an email the other day about why I think when people look at this case, they always look at, oh, Novell has done usability studies and oh, GNOME is so much easier to use for non-technical people. I think that's a bunch of crap right there, because I think it's about the toolkit, not about the any usability studies or anything like that. Because if you let's take a step back and look at the toolkits. GTK is licensed under the LGPL, which allows you to do proprietary programs with GTK without no fuss. Then Qt, it's licensed under the GPL, not the LGPL, the GPL. And that prohibits proprietary linking. So you can't really use the open source version of Qt to do proprietary programs. You've got to get a license from Toltec. And that's a shitload of money, I can tell you right now. It's around something like €700 per developer or something like that. So put yourself in Novell's place and go to Adobe and say, hey, Adobe, you can port Photoshop to Linux and get so much revenue. But if you can do that, you're going to have to pay Toltec a shitload of money. So... I think that's why Novell is going with GNOME. I think it's a toolkit. That's the problem right there.
Of course. I have to say that I think that your English is fantastic. However, it's even better when you're swearing. You got it down, man. Like you can say you can say shit just like an American. I'm totally convinced.
Thanks a lot, man.
Like you learned it over here, you know.
Well, actually, my English is pretty much based off of hour-long sessions of TLLTS, so there.
That's why you can say shit so well.
Thank God you don't sound like, what's his name from Metallica? The drummer.
Lars?
There. Lars. Oh, what an annoying accent that guy's got. It's like, kind of like Danish meets Californian. Not a good combination.
Well, that's exactly what it is, though, right? I mean, he's a tennis. His family's tennis stars or something like that.
Yeah, his dad was a tennis star.
Well, the Danish word for shit is actually very, very, very similar to lord in English.
Okay,
what is it?
Hook us up. What is it?
L-O-R-T, lord.
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 Yeah, exactly. That means shit in Danish.
Awesome. See, now this is this is the kind of thing.
This
really
is useful.
We need to have a lesson in Danish.
How to curse
swear
in
words.
Danish.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's what we need. Everybody wants to know that.
Then you can swear at people without them knowing what it actually is and get your frustrations out.
That's right.
That'd work for me. That'd work for me on my commute.
Now, how do you say shithead in Danish? That's what I want to know.
Link.
Shut the fuck up.
Shithead. What the heck do you mean by shithead?
Shithead, like it is a descriptive term for someone with a head full of shit.
A descriptive term for dumb fuck.
Pretty much, yeah.
I don't know, actually. That's an interesting one. I have to think about that.
In English, we say washco.
Yeah.
And everybody knows.
Yeah, that's right.
Scheißkopf in German. That's what it is.
Or gas tank in English.
There you go.
Yeah. But you know.
Well, sled means prostitute in Dutch.
Are you on the Frapper map there, Pat?
Yes, I am.
Do the Frapper. Well,
before I do Frapper, I have one thing to say. If you're going to set up...
Mute his mic.
If you're going to set up a dedicated Myth TV box, not Myth is the way to go. That's all I'm going to say. So let's do the Frapper shout-outs. We got Jonathan in Union City, Indiana. We got Dave Yates from North South Carolina, our buddy with a lot of Links podcast, who I heard Link on at the beginning of the last one.
Did you send him an audio recording?
Yeah. Must have. We've got Simon Borwell from Malmo, Sweden.
They won't anymore.
Jason Jackson
here.
From Meriden, Idaho. Tony Pantaleo from Yucapa, California. Rev from Perkamonville, PA. We've got Vim.
A local person.
From the Netherlands.
Somewhat.
I didn't know we had Eli Tomlinson on next week.
Yes, we do. We got Shua from London, England. Andrew Schott from Cudahy, Wisconsin. We've got, Hassan from Marrakesh, Morocco. We got Port Sever from Glossop, England. We've got Andy Choens from Albany, New York. We've got Todd from Warrington, PA. We've got Chris from Warminster, PA. And a whole bunch of spammer posts that I deleted.
Welcome spammers,
and goodbye.
As long as they run Linux, hey, you know, leave them on.
And we've got Eli Tomlinson from GameX, who we talked to at the Linux World Expo.
He's on the Frapper map?
Who?
Oh,
he's our guest next week.
Okay.
This is that whole none of us are paying attention thing.
We never pay attention to each other.
We're running out of guests.
I know, we only have a month full.
We only have... what are we going to do come June 14th, 21st?
We'll have to make it up as we go along.
We'll
find
more.
Back to the witty banter.
Hey, you can always call me if that's of interest.
Turn off the Skype. Turn off the asterisks.
I was just saying, are we going to start doing the... we going to start doing the playful banter shows again?
Yeah.
Get some of our listeners on.
All 60 episodes.
Yak for an hour.
Cool. Any questions or comments that you'd like to make, T, before I play us out?
Yeah, I was just wondering, what do you guys think of that, the things I said about GTK and QT?
No, I see what you're saying there, and I do think that probably does play a part of it there.
Absolutely.
I bet it does, yep.
The commercial issues surrounding QT.
I asked Miguel de Icaza why he prefers GTK to QT, and his response was, because GTK is a free license. That's what his response was.
That's weird. QT has been GTK has been. QT has been GPL since the year 2000, and even Richard Stallman thanks Trolltech for it. That should be enough of Miguel right there.
Yeah, but Miguel is the mono man, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what he's using.
He really wants to use .NET.
He really, really likes that stuff.
I know there's a project on SourceForge called QT Sharp, so he should be able to use Mono and KDE very soon, or maybe right now.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm tired, man. I got up early this morning, 6 o'clock.
Ooh, that's rough.
Early. Yeah, that's early.
Yeah, you know what I feel like
every day. When you hit the 4 o'clock mark, come talk to us.
I know.
I did that already, so.
That's out of...
As you say, it's 4 o'clock for you, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's 0442.
Sorry to keep you up all night.
All right, T, we're going to let you go to bed. We got to close this show up so we can do the same.
Yeah, but thanks
we're going to let you get up and go to work.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot for having me on, and I'd love to be back again someday.
It's great having
good
you.
Good talking to you, man.
Yeah, I'll see you. Talk to you on Sunday.
Take care, guys.
Talk to you on Sunday.
Get some sleep.
Yeah, well.
I will talk to you
thanks
on...
Thanks a lot.
You're going to be there Sunday, right?
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
At least until my mom makes some real weird ass deal with a family member that we have to go visit. But next Sunday, I should be all.
All right.
If you can say that.
All right.
You got any music?
Yep. Okay, everybody.
Talk to you later. Have a good one.
Hey, good night, everybody.
For show. What the hell show was it?
137,
right?
Yeah.
Here on the wonderful.
I don't have any official songs to play us out.
You can play Hip Hop High, that song that we were going to play a few weeks back.
Really?
Still in the
good night, everybody.
I believe we're packing it in. Hey, everybody, thanks for listening to us. Make sure you come stop by again next week. Next Wednesday, same time.
Good night.
For 138.
Whose directory is it in?
It's in mine.
Good night.
Is it an AUG or an MP3?
I think it's MP3.
What's it called?
Hip Hop High.
Hold on a second. I got to look in here. All these things.
The name of the group is Chance.
Oh. Yeah. Huh? Oh. So we're going to be playing, if I get around to it. Oh, I hate my password. Okay, here we go.
Chance with Hip Hop High.
Oh, no, we're not there yet.
No.
All right, you ready? And hopefully, I have it down low enough so it won't blow everybody's brains out. Did somebody turn down the volume of something here?
No, we all play touch, not the... Yeah, and we all have
we'll some about it.
Maybe that's what you're noticing there, buddy. Are you nobody on but you anymore.
Because for some reason, the Chance Hip Hop High, we're not getting anything.
You broke it.
What the heck? Nothing's playing there, Pat. Oh, I know why nothing's playing. Because... Lame is not the application you run. That would be the problem. Duh. Yeah. This should do it.
Well, they're fighting for air. Stretch our necks to stand, but they're too quick to compare. Hold the body for ransom, 'cause the mind is a billionaire. Then drop into a hip hop high. Fly solo, maybe go no. Spin around till the leader starts to fall. Streets past the unfair. Look around, you're already there. The next in line takes things over. So fill out the questionnaire. Then drop into a hip. Fly so low, maybe go no spin.
Between the time when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of. And unto this, Conan, destined to bear the jeweled crown of Aquilonia upon a troubled brow. It is I, his chronicler, who alone can tell thee of his saga. Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Oh, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.